Stay tuned now on 1460 WVOX for The Ballot Box with your hosts Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin. The Ballot Box is a monthly program brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Now, The Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Good morning and welcome to The Ballot Box. I'm Tamar Tate and I'm joined by my co-host Nita Lubin. And we're coming to you on behalf of the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle, courtesy of WVOX, 1460 AM, and our talented sound engineer, Gerald Bell. So, Nina, how are you doing this morning?
Okay, Tamar, good morning. In the process of saying goodbye to New Rochelle's spectacular foliage, more leaves and more vibrant colors than I've seen in a long time. Really no need to drive upstate or head into parts of New England for the leaf show this year. You've probably made similar observations in your treks around the city.
Definitely, but mostly in my backyard where it's nonstop leaf raking.
Right. So let's head this morning right into our interview with today's guest and follow up afterwards with our monthly league updates. Is that okay with you, Tamar?
That sounds perfect. Go ahead, Nina.
Okay, thanks. Today's guest, Professor Jeff Weiss, was our guest on the Ballot Box about 1 year ago. At that time, he previewed the once-every-10-year redistricting process that was about to begin. That is, the redrawing of our congressional and state legislative districts to make sure that the population size of each district is roughly the same, so that the U.S. remains a nation in which each person's vote is as valuable as the next person's. Professor Weiss teaches on these matters at New York Law School and as a preeminent authority on the national census and New York redistricting, heads the New York Census and Redistricting Institute at New York Law School. This is a nonpartisan redistricting resource center that is the first of its kind in a New York City academic institution. Outside of New York Law School, Professor Weiss has guided legislative leaders across the nation at federal, state, and local levels in redistricting and voting rights matters. Here in New York, Professor Weiss has served as counsel to the New York State Legislature.
So with over, I guess it's now 40 years experience in voting rights and redistricting, Professor Weiss's experience is frequently called on these days at state legislatures and legislative advisory groups or independent redistricting groups redraw their maps, and we have some completion deadlines looming. So we're therefore very grateful that he's afforded time for a Ballot Box visit, and we warmly welcome him back. So good morning, Professor Weiss. How are you today?
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be back with you again today.
It's wonderful that you could take time to join us, and I know you're pressed for time this morning, so let's jump right in. First,
sure.
For listeners who might need some context, would you take an introductory minute or two and explain redistricting and the importance of redistricting in our representative democracy?
Sure. Redistricting is one of the building blocks of our democracy, and perhaps the best way to explain it is to suggest that you look outside your window, your streets, your schools, your hospitals, your senior centers, your parks. All the quality of life issues that government delivers is based on who represents you in Albany, in Washington, in White Plains, in your village and town halls. The lines that are redrawn every 10 years required by the Constitution under the one person, one vote doctrine, which is said earlier, every person's vote has to be equal to everyone else's vote, so that districts are of equal size population, and that the people who are elected to serve in Congress, the state legislature, and in local governments are they're based on how those lines are drawn, which communities they represent, and how they'll best represent you. And this takes place once every 10 years after the census is taken in the first year of each decade.
That's why the census is so important, and we were urging all our listeners to complete that census. And what was the census turnout? It was pretty, due to the pandemic, pretty low this time around, wasn't it?
It was low, but interestingly, New York State's population increased by about 7%. I'm sorry, 4%, and the national average was an increase per state in about 7%. So unfortunately, New York, although it had a slight increase in population, New York, did not keep up with other states like Washington, like Florida, Texas, that gained population. So New York ended up losing one congressional district in the congressional reapportionment process, but the state population count wasn't as low as had been predicted. In fact, in New York City, the city population increased by an astounding 660,000 plus people. And that may have been due in part to the extraordinary efforts by the New York City Planning Department to make sure the Census Bureau had literally every single address of every occupied housing unit, whether it was legal or illegal. They wanted to make sure that every household got a census form.
They did a spectacular job, evidently.
And Westchester County also had a great census complete count effort that County Executive George Latimer and Planning Director Norma Drummond organized, and that was a day-to-day, week-to-week effort that I was also glad to have been part of.
Yes, us as well. But it sounds like we have more people in New York than we had before the census, more people than the last census showed us, but one less congressional seat.
That's right.
To fill, which really means there's a lot of redrawing that has to be done in order to attempt to equalize everything again in New York.
Right.
So I imagine those folks are very busy redrawing. But before we focus on New York, can you tell us anything about how redistricting is faring in other states? Have any states actually completed the task of revising their legislative maps?
Well, yes. We'll see about over a third of the states having completed redistricting by the end of December. But so far, we've had redistrictings completed in Illinois, Iowa, North Carolina, Texas, Montana. I think yesterday Ohio passed its plan. So, the states are moving forward pretty quickly. Many states have draft plans or have had committee votes on plans or are looking to final passage before the end of the year. All in all, the process will complete probably by February or March of 2022. But the states are busy now. We've seen Democrats drawing lines to their advantage in Illinois. We've seen Republicans taking advantage of the new census data to draw more seats for themselves in Iowa, North Carolina, Texas, and Montana. So the landscape looks more dismal from a fairness point of view than we've seen in the past. We thought it was an awful lot of gerrymandering or drawing lines for partisan advantage 10 years ago. We may be even seeing more of that now, which is not good news. But I also expect that we'll see more litigation and more challenges to plans across the country than ever before.
The whole process of redrawing these maps is incredibly complex. There's so many stakeholders. Could you just sketch out how this works in New York State for us?
In New York State, traditionally, or for the past 200 plus years, the state legislature simply redrew the state assembly, Senate, and congressional lines internally. The legislature would have a committee to hold hearings, draw up a plan, vote on it, and usually those plans were drawn by the majority party in power to help reelect their incumbent.
Let's return now to the ballot box with your hosts, Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Once again, the ballot box on 1460 WVOX.
Hi, welcome back to the ballot box with our guest, Professor Jeff Weiss, who started to speak about the Independent Redistricting Commission in New York. It's the first time that such a commission, as opposed to the legislature, is redrawing our maps. But the independent may not be so independent. Please continue, Professor Weiss.
Well, legally in the Constitution, the commission was labeled as the Independent Redistricting Commission, but in reality, the commission's work is subject to approval or rejection by the state legislature. The commission can submit one set of plans to the legislature. If that's rejected, the commission can submit a second set of maps to the legislature. And if that's rejected, on a third go-around, the legislature can draw its own map. So unlike commissions in California, in Michigan, and in Arizona, where the commission's work is final and those plans, you know, become law, the New York Commission is subject to the legislature's approval as well as the governor's.
I see. And where are we in the timeline now for the IRC?
Well, this is now mid-November. The commission has been conducting a series of required hearings, about 14 hearings across the state, to receive input on draft maps the commission released in September. The commission was supposed to agree on one set of maps for the Congress and the legislature to, you know, to use for public comment at these hearings, but they could not agree. So they're hearing testimony on two sets of maps. There was a hearing in Westchester, I believe, last week. There are hearings this week in Staten Island, Brooklyn and Queens, and they wrap up next week in Nassau and Suffolk counties.
Jeff, what are you seeing as stumbling blocks to a smooth wrap-up? Where is
the commission? The commission only has 10 members, so by virtue of not having a tie-breaking odd member, there could be a stalemate in the commission. Also, to send a plan to the legislature of the 10 members, you have to have 7 of the 10 members agree to a plan, and that also includes one member of the commission appointed by each of the 4 legislative leaders, the Speaker, the Senate President, the Assembly, and Senate Minority Leaders. So you have to not only have bipartisan support, but you have to have 7 votes to report a plan. And, you know, there are concerns that, you know, the commission could split 5-5. There are 4 Democrats, 4 Republicans, 2 independents, where each of the independents appear to be siding more or less with the Republicans or Democrats. So it may be a 5-5 kind of a vote, but 7 votes are needed to approve a plan.
This whole process is so complex, and I know we recently had a proposal on the New York State ballot, proposal number 1, that was rejected by the voters, that would have actually tweaked this redistricting process sped up the time frame for the commission to submit its maps that would have given people more time, to frame for the commission the maps, to know where their districts are, and for candidates to know if they still live within the new borders, and also for office seekers to collect nominating petition signatures within those new political boundaries. Can you tell us what the impact of that proposal's defeat might be?
Well, the amendment that was defeated 2 weeks ago is designed primarily to deal with the pandemic-caused late delivery of census data for redistricting, and also to address the spring primary that the state has. Redistricting should have been a 9-10 month process. The data should have arrived to begin drawing lines in April, but it didn't get released by the Census Bureau until mid-August, which then condensed the whole process into 4 months to be able to have the commission complete its work by the end of the year to send plans to the legislature. But the but the commission has until late February to submit a second set of plans to the legislature should things take that long. And in 2019, the legislature moved the legislative and gubernatorial primary from September to June, which means that petitioning gets underway in late February or early March, and that would require the lines to be in place by late January, early February, so that the boards of elections can process the new lines for the elections. So without the amendment would have moved up the deadlines so that the first plan submission would be due January 1st and a second plan submission on January 15th, not all the way until February 28th. And that would have enabled the commission and the legislature to get their jobs done in time for the spring primary. It's also complicated by the fact that for the congressional primary, a federal judge ruled 10 years ago that the spring primary, that for congressional districts, you have to have a spring primary to comply with the military overseas voting act requirements. So since the amendment was defeated, if the commission does agree on one map and sends it to the legislature by January 15th, and if that plan is rejected, then the commission has much too long a period of time to send its second plan. So something has to give if we get to that point in time. There are a lot of ifs because these things haven't happened yet.
Right. So the New York voters spoke in rejecting the ballot proposal, and I am that was a formal voice. How much input does the public have now as we go forward with the redistricting commission? When we come back, I'd like you to answer that question. What difference might the public be able to make in different areas? Okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
Return now to The Ballot Box with your hosts, Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Once again, The Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Welcome back to The Ballot Box. Again, our guest is Professor Jeffrey Weiss, preeminent authority on the National Census and New York redistricting. And before the break, we were discussing how the public can have input onto this in this whole process of redistricting. Professor Weiss, are there opportunities for people to get involved if they want to?
Well, there are still opportunities to contact the state commission and get your thoughts across to them. The Westchester hearing was last week, so they won't be back. But if you go to their website, and that's www.nyirc.gov, you can submit testimony, you can submit a statement, you can even submit a map if you can draw one. So that's the next best thing to do right now is to contact the commission by email, and they have a portal on their website for you to do that.
And is there a deadline for that?
They're saying they need all comment by Thanksgiving, so we have just over a week.
Over a week, okay.
Just a week, actually. It's next Wednesday. It's not a legal deadline, but they're suggesting that all the comments ought to be in by November 24th.
Okay, thanks. And I hope listeners realize that this really is the first time that the public does have such a huge say in the drawing of these lines, that it is not done as it used to be behind closed doors at the legislature. It's a real opportunity to get involved at a very basic level in democratic operations.
Professor Weiss, you've been going to, I was going to say, you've been going to these meetings. Has the public been getting involved? Is there a large turnout?
The public has gotten involved with concerns over keeping different so-called communities of interest together. But the single most important thing the commission members ask for is for specificity. If you can actually draw the boundaries of where you think your community or district ought to be. And although, you know, they wouldn't expect everyone to be an overnight map maker, and there are free tools on the internet that help you draw maps, and the commission website can help lead you to those. At least if you live in a community that you can say is bounded by, you know, let's say, the New York Thruway to the west, to the Cross County Expressway easterly, to the to a boundary on the east side, then over to the west side. Try to be specific with streets, with known places of interest, with boulevards. Try to identify, and also why this is a community. Is it socioeconomic? Is it racial? Is it ethnic? Is it academic? Why do you identify your community the way it is? Is your community broken up and divided now into several districts you don't like? But just be very specific as you can as to what you think your community district ought to look like or include.
Thank you, Jeff. And for anyone who feels tentative about grappling with this, please visit the League of Women Voters of New York, which is simply lwvny.org. Click on redistricting and get your education, the background, the training in reading maps, resources to draw your maps. And it's simple, it's comprehensible, and it'll really give you what you need to have a say in the redistricting process, lwvny.org.
Jeff, zeroing in right now on Westchester, which is where we're broadcasting from, how smoothly is the process going here? What are the issues?
Well, the issues you typically find in Westchester relate to the congressional districts because under Supreme Court precedent, each congressional district in the state must be within one person of each other in population size. So for a district that's 776,000 people, they can differ from District 1 to District 2 by one person. And in doing that, as you draw districts from Buffalo moving easterly and from Long Island moving northerly and from the Adirondacks moving southerly, you know, there's a crunch point where you've got to work out the numbers to be exact. And that's often, at least in past decades, you know, caused a friction as to how to draw districts in the Northern Bronx, Westchester, Rockland County area. Whether a district is going to cross the bridge, whether a district is going to move from the east side of the Hudson to the west side. So people have been commenting on that, and it's all still to be decided. Also, 10 years ago, there was controversy over the failure of the Senate district plan to create a new minority district in Northern Bronx, Southern Westchester. So those have usually been the pressure points. And now with new census data and with a new commission-type process, it's left to the commission to grapple with whether they can agree on one plan to, merge competing interests.
Well, I was at the White Plains hearing, public hearing of the commission, and for people listening in the New Rochelle, Mount Vernon, Pelham area, Lower Westchester, we are all the center of at least one of the controversies with regard to whether in Congress, New Rochelle, Mount Vernon, and Pelham stay roughly as they are with a majority Westchester district, or do they get attached to the Bronx and Queens and become a district, a new district with them? Or then there might be other options by now, but this is a, to my mind, kind of big deal. You know, the congressman in Flushing, Queens will be your congressman. The congressman of Flushing, Queens will be your congressman.
Over the years, Nita Lowey, I recall, 20, maybe 30 years ago, had part of Queens. That was all driven by the need to equalize the populations in the districts. And despite that, you have the pushback that, let's say, Westchester has nothing in common with Queens. Those arguments are being made. You know, yesterday I heard why Nassau County has nothing in common with Brooklyn when a suggestion was made to create a new district that combines Brooklyn, Queens, and Nassau. But it's all driven by the numbers. It's driven by the political decisions that these commissioners need to deal with, and then overall, whether the legislature is going to approve a plan by the commission or whether the legislature is going to make changes and draw a different plan.
Right. As you said, Tamar, very complex.
Very complex. And these communities, some of them, their issues are so diverse from one another. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, someone sitting in Eastchester having much in common in terms of the issues that are important to them versus someone sitting in Flushing, Queens. You know, it just seems like your interests are so different. And challenge to represent someone, you know, an area that's that diverse.
Right. How do you find a well-meaning, competent congressperson that can deal with the issues of Queens and the Bronx and New Rochelle? You know,
and another challenge is to make sure that when that does happen, that a member of Congress has the resources to have a district office or staff outreach in the you know, the far reaches of the district. That's often a complaint at any level of government, that if you have a little piece of a community that's distinct from other parts of the district, you know, will the elected official care about that community? That's a major issue that comes up a lot, that people come into these hearings and say, we live in a little sliver at the west end of this district and have never seen our elected official in 10
right.
years.
Point taken. We'll be back after the break and be able to go over that once more. Thanks.
Let's return now to the Ballot Box with your hosts, Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Once again, the Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Welcome back to the Ballot Box. I'm Tamar Tate, and my co-host Nina Lubin and I are speaking with Professor Jeffrey Weiss, who is a preeminent authority on the national census and New York redistricting. And Professor Weiss, we had been talking about the defeat of Proposal 1 on the New York State ballot 2 weeks ago, which would have tweaked the redistricting process. But that proposal, it also would have changed how prisoners are counted in New York State for redistricting purposes. Right now, there's this confusing split system. New York's prisoners are counted at their previous home address for the state legislature's maps, and then they're counted at their prison addresses for Congress. So can you explain why this is important to the redistricting process?
Well, sure. In 2010, New York State enacted a law that reallocated prisoner addresses to use their home of record before incarceration rather than count them at their prison location, where they really serve as phantom people since they don't really live in the prison community but are sent there for, you know, being incarcerated, and they're counted there by the Census Bureau. In 2010, the law was enacted to cover the Assembly and the Senate because there were legal uncertainties whether the Constitution would allow adjustment to the congressional redistricting database. So the congressional districts were left out of the 2010 law. when the amendment was developed in 2020, the amendment that was defeated earlier this month, a section of the amendment would have made the entire reallocation process part of the Constitution, not just the statute, and would have added congressional redistricting to the mix. So right now, the state has the authority to reallocate for a state Senate and Assembly redistricting, but not for congressional redistricting. And it would take a simple bill passed by the legislature, approved by the governor, to make that happen. But that's one of the challenges ahead of us, is can the legislature get this done in time for congressional redistricting during the current process?
And I think really the problem with that is New York, like most states, the demographics of New York's imprisoned population, it skews non-white and urban, while the communities where the prisons are located tend to be white and rural. And so prisoners, obviously, they can't vote while they're incarcerated. So then the districts they're counted in gain their numbers, but they have no impact on the outcome of local elections.
Right. They're basically filler. We have districts, I think, in Rome, New York, where a substantial part of a legislative district are prisoners. They're just used as filler. This has been a major civil rights and equity issue, that there are over 30,000 incarcerated persons in New York State prison facilities, and the numbers would have us be able to reallocate about 92% of all of those individuals back to their prior homes of record before they were incarcerated.
And so hence we have these districts that are very imbalanced. And also, I think there is a lot of confusion about how prisoners are counted. I heard the term dirty data. In a few places, there's actually discrepancies between the U.S. Census data and the data from the Department of Corrections. And there's some weird results, like you have prison census tracts that actually have negative populations. There was one example they gave in the Wyoming Correctional Facility in Attica, which, according to the adjusted count for 2020, had a population of negative 938. So this whole process of aligning the numbers is very confusing, too.
Yeah, it's also partly due to that, where you have an inmate without a home of record or an inmate who is not from New York, they're simply subtracted from the numbers overall. So if you have 100 prisoners in a facility and 90 of them have identifiable New York addresses to reallocate them back to, and 10 don't, those 10 are dropped from the numbers, and that leads to the kinds of discrepancies you're talking about.
Jeff, yeah. If the prisoners remain, if the census counts the prisoners in the prisons, does that mean that the prisons get that much more money for
facility? This only applies to the redistricting. It doesn't apply to funding. That's a misconception.
Okay, so it's a matter of voice, not a matter of funding.
Right.
Okay.
That's correct.
That's clear. Thank you.
Yeah, you have these large rural areas in upstate New York that don't have enough people, but they have these huge prisons. So there's incentive to count the prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
There's a story how someplace in Iowa, a city council member was elected with 3 write-in votes by a spouse's friends because 98% of the district was a prison. And they can't vote.
That's crazy.
That is truly almost unbelievable.
Professor Weiss, I know you've got to leave us shortly. Can you just, in a nutshell, tell us what's the redistricting process from here going forward?
Well, the lines that are going to be set in place either through the commission or by the legislature are going to be with us for 10 years. The next time we're going to see redistricting is after the 2030 census. So if you care about who represents you in Washington, in White Plains, in Albany, then you should care about redistricting and make sure that your family, your community is represented the best way that these lines can be drawn to deliver the best services that you need. That's what it's all about.
Well, thank you so much.
And
again, thank you for taking time out of your schedule to join us
pleasure.
On the ballot box again. It's been a pleasure having you.
Look forward
and,
to hearing you
back
on the
again.
Air again. I know that you have been
visiting
with numerous organizations. Thank you.
Look forward to seeing you again. Thank you for having me on today.
That was a pleasure. Listeners, do stick with us. We have a couple of league items to go over before we sign off for the day. Tamar, do you want to
sure.
start? Okay.
Yeah, we have a really interesting program coming up. The League of Women Voters of New Rochelle is going to be holding a virtual book series on African-American women suffragists on December 14th at 6:30 p.m. This is a topic Nina and I have explored with a few of our guests in the past, and it's really fascinating. And this book that they'll be discussing, it's going to be the second in a series of the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle Zoom book discussions on the role of African-American women in the women's suffrage movement. The book they're discussing in December it's entitled Vanguard, How Black Women Broke Barriers, Won the Vote, and Insisted on Equality for All. That book is by Martha S. Jones, who's professor of history at Johns Hopkins University and a legal and cultural historian, and you can get it from the library. So we are going to have leading that discussion. Again, it's going to be on Zoom. Leading the discussion will be the Reverend Deirdre Clark, who's an associate pastor of the New York Covenant Church here in New Rochelle. And the book discussion is part of a series funded by the Reading and Discussion Program of Humanities New York. And they have a variation on the theme of Votes for Women. And it's recommended that you read the book, but it's not essential if you want to join the Zoom. If you get your hands on the book, wonderful. If not, I know the Reverend Deirdre Clark is going to be a phenomenal host, and it looks like a fascinating discussion. So if you're interested in partaking, you can call the League. Our number is 914-632-2308, or go to our website to learn more. And
okay.
Nina, I think we have another
event. A couple more, right.
Okay.
That's December 14th, folks. But tonight, this very evening, the public is invited to the League of Women Voters of Westchester's Zoom meeting. It's at 6:30 p.m. tonight, and it's all about budget. The County Budget Director, Larry Soule, will present the proposed 2022 Westchester County operating budget and answer questions. If you want to find out where those local tax dollars are going, this is the place to go. You can reach out to the League for more information about tonight's hearing at 6:30 at 914-366-7312. And last but not least, Tamar, you want to take it away?
Sure. If you're not a member of our local New Rochelle League of Women Voters and you're interested in finding out who we are and what the League does, in a nutshell, we are a nationwide nonpartisan organization of women and men keeping our democracy strong. Please visit our website. Just enter New Rochelle League of Women Voters and you'll get there.
Bye-bye, everybody. Listen to us next month, Wednesday, December 15th at 9 a.m. Everyone have a great day.
York State's most influential station. 1460 WVOX.